Okay, thank you. What I want to present is a new look at some old data. And I did some work in Grand Canyon in the 80s and 90s with my colleague Larry Coates. And we found some figurine sites, and so we got involved in this figurine project. And so we're re-looking at the data again recently, and it fits within this conference well because, first of all, you all recognize our symbol of the society, the split twig figurine, so I don't think I have to introduce that very much here. And secondly, we're talking about climate change in the past and looking at how climate change may have shaped behavior and culture in the past in relation to this hunting ritual that was performed in Grand Canyon so long ago. And just as a brief summary of a background of this artifact, hundreds of these have been found in caves in the Grand Canyon, and they're usually associated with little rock cairns or they're placed on the floor of the cave, but they're never associated with occupation sites. All these sites were only visited for depositing these figurines, maybe building a cairn and then leaving, so there was nothing occupation about it. In addition, Schwartz was the first to say that this was probably related to some kind of hunting magic that they were doing, that they were placing there in the hopes to gain better procurement of big game species, and that is still a widely accepted hypothesis. He also mentioned that they were probably doing this only at caves that had difficult access, and he was on to something there, and I'm going to come back to that at the end, but we now know that in looking at all the caves that they aren't just difficult access. And the questions that have been asked have been, why Grand Canyon? Why so many there? Have been a few sites outside of Grand Canyon, but they're a different function. How are these sites chosen? How often were they visited? And why did the practice end so abruptly? Why did it begin so abruptly and end so abruptly at about 4,000 to 3,000 years ago? And the kinds of caves that you find these artifacts in range from I wouldn't call this a walk-in cave. It's more of it's a scary cave that you have to go across this crumbly limestone ledge, traverse over to this large alcove, and in the back of that alcove, there's a small cave entrance you have to duck down and crawl into, and it's right inside of that cave where you start finding the artifacts and the figurines. But it's in a dramatic location with at least 600-foot drop straight down below it. Other caves are even more difficult to access, like these two here. You have to drop down off the top of the mesa onto this narrow ledge and then traverse in. I did go into some of these sites with expert climber. Larry Coates was my expert climber, my co-author, and I can attest that they are very scary. And to go into these as an archaic hunter without ropes must have been amazing. And then some of the caves, though, are walk-in, like this one here. And this one had 14 rock cairns in it, a number of artifacts, and you can just walk right up to it. Stanton's Cave, if you know that site, is right down at river level, and that also was full of figurines and a large walk-in cave. So it's not just difficult access that they were going for. But we do know that these caves, all of them that we surveyed and looked at what had been found and what we had found, all of them had a dark zone where there was a point where you just can't see anything as you go back into these caves. They were deep enough to have that dark zone. And that will come up here in a minute, too, of why that was important. In addition, all these caves had fossil remains dating back to the Pleistocene. And the preservation in Grand Canyon is so good because it's such a dry, arid environment that you'd find dung, bones, teeth of extinct animals like these mountain goat dung and bones here on the surface of a cave. And you'd also find bighorn sheep bones, deer bones, and so forth. So big game animal remains were at the front of these caves. And in these pack rat middens, and the goats used these caves as a shelter during the Pleistocene. And so they are well represented there. And the preservation, again, is quite good. Here's a skull that we recovered from one cave. It's now at the Park Service in Grand Canyon. You can see it's got the horn sheaths completely intact and tissue dried on the side. It dates to over 12,000 years old. So this was on the surface of one of these caves. Pack rat middens are also common in these caves, also very well preserved. This pack rat midden has not only fecal pellets of the pack rats, but also pellets of the big game animals as well are found in these middens. And this is a feather of California condor, which is what I was studying at the time, that dates to 40,000 years old. So that shows how long-term the preservation can be in these sites. So the caves, our analysis indicated that that the correlations we have is that the caves are chosen for their depth and their fossil contents. The depth probably representing an entrance to the underworld is what we believe. That's our hypothesis, that similar to many native groups in the Southwest today, their cosmology is that they emerge from an underworld. And they may have seen these caves as an entrance to that underworld, and there's hundreds of caves in Grand Canyon, so a lot of entrances there. And in addition, they were expert hunters, so they would have recognized the dung and bone and spore of big game animals. They hardly would have recognized animal remains that are no longer present today, like the extinct mountain goat. And so they would consider them ancestral animals at the entrances to these caves, to the underworld. And that's why we think they went to these sites for the figurine ritual. In addition, we also found some cairns built with pack rat midden directly. And this is unusual because there's plenty of rock. They didn't need to use midden. They specifically chose pack rat midden to build some of these cairns. And it's probably because they had the big game remains in the midden itself, the dung and fecal pellets. In addition, we found near one cairn, here's a mountain goat jaw. We don't know if it was directly associated with why the cairn was built right there, but it could be. And here's a cave that had three cairns in a row, and that's a picture of that last one that I just showed you, but all built with a combination of rock and pack rat midden. So it's a really interesting correlation there that they were doing this even though they had plenty of rock available. Now let's look at the dates of these, and we analyzed the dates, and unfortunately there's not a lot of dates on figurines. There's eight dates that have been completed directly on figurines, so a small piece taken off and used for AMS dating. And then there's these associated artifacts like unmodified or split sticks that are often found with them. Sometimes they represent little spears that were placed in the side. They've been dated too, so seven of those. That's 15 dates total, and this shows where they fall in terms of radiocarbon years before present on the x-axis, with the youngest to the left, and then the different sites that have these dates shown there on the y-axis, and you can see that the youngest date is about 3,100 years old. The oldest is 4,390, but most of them cluster in between a time range of 4,100 to 3,500 if you take those two extreme ends off. So a fairly narrow period of time where these objects were made and placed in these caves with this ritual. Now, I'll show you the picture of the oldest one, Crescendo Cave. I showed you this picture earlier. This is Crescendo Cave, and some people dismiss it as a figurine site because no figurines have actually been found within it. However, we think it is a figurine site, one of the earliest, because it has the cairns built the same way. It has sticks placed by the cairns. There's mountain goat remains around here. In fact, that jaw I showed is from this cave. Here's a long stick that's been split but hasn't been made yet into a figurine. That's how they start with making figurines, is splitting the long stick that way. It's usually a willow or a skunk bush or Rhus trilobata that they would use for that, so very flexible. So we didn't excavate in here, of course, so there could be figurines in there underneath some of these cairns where they often place them. And so we think this is a figurine site and the oldest one known so far in Grand Canyon. I wanted to mention Rebound Cave again, too, the walk-in site, because it has more radiocarbon dates from that one site than any other in Grand Canyon. And it had 14 cairns in it, and you can see a couple of them here. You can lift the rock off the top of this one and take this photo of a cache of figurines, three right there. This one's been damaged by a rodent gnawing. And grass bundles that are often placed around or by these figurines is emerging from underneath that cairn there. And I mentioned Rebound because, like I said, it's got more dates than any other cave. And now let's look at how these dates fall out in terms of visitation times. I've rearranged the order of the dates here to show you some time clusters here that relate to this. And here we have three different caves that have dates that are very tightly clustered together in the 4000s BP there, for the first century of the 4000s. And then we've got another cluster here, two different caves that have both identical dates at 3850. There's another cluster here from three caves that tightly cluster around 3700 to 3750. And then there's a couple of dates here that tightly cluster at 3590 to 30. Most important about these clusters is that Rebound Cave falls within every one of them. So Rebound Cave, with the most dates from it, it indicates that that cave is only visited episodically or only occasionally. And sometimes, like here's a 200-year gap, and here's a 100-year gap, and here's another a couple hundred years gap between these dates and visitation of these sites. So they're not being visited continuously from what the data shows so far. They're being visited every now and then for some reason. So let's look at why that might be. Right at 4,200 years ago, there was a climate change taking place on a global scale. We know this from ice cores from Greenland and from Antarctica that show a change in climate occurring at that time. We also know from cultural studies, archaeological work, that some major cultures were breaking down at that time with climate change. And this is just a couple of examples of what was happening. There's many more beyond that on a global scale. If we look at a regional scale in North America, it gets a little murkier in terms of what was going on. We know there were changes taking place about 4,000 years ago in North America. But in Western North America, we've got some discrepant data here. We've got sites that show dry conditions occurring, shown in the red here, between 4,000 and 3,000 years ago. But we also have a few sites shown in the yellow that show moisture conditions were occurring between that time period. Some other work I've just completed shows the pack rat middens in western Colorado also show some drier periods, maybe increase in fires or something going on at about 4,000, 3,000 years ago. So we think there's a correlation there with the figurine complex during the same time period. This recent study by Baron and Anderson sheds a little more light on what might be happening. They used multiple proxies to look at the climatic record, and they found that looking at sea surface temperature and when the modern patterns of El Nino Southern Oscillations began, it's right here at 4,000 when we started getting into those modern patterns. And before that, sea surface temperatures were higher. That would translate into moist, warm air coming on shore and more moisture in the west. But then that abruptly changed at about 4,000 into these highly variable conditions that can lead to wet seasons and prolonged drought seasons in the La Nina phase of the El Nino. And here again shows where the jet streams are adjusted from El Nino Southern Oscillations. And there's other oscillations that take place too besides El Ninos, but you can get in the La Nina phase this dry air coming in and maintaining dry conditions and drought conditions at that time. So this could help explain perhaps why we have discrepant data, why some data show wet periods, some data show dry periods during this time period, but it is a period of major change. What does droughts, though, do to big game species? It's probably intuitively obvious what would happen, but if you have a decline in winter precipitation, which is what a La Nina phase does, it makes it be a very dry winter, that then means that the spring survival of the young in the spring is depressed. And that's known now with many studies on bighorn sheep, but also on deer and pronghorn. A number of studies have shown the effect of drought on big game productivity. So if big game productivity is going down with drought, and the archaic people who depend on the big game species are being impacted by that, then we think that they would have began performing this ritual, going to sites of the entrance of the underworld in order to try to rectify that problem and improve their chances. And they only had to do this periodically. When drought periods became bad, they would go and do this. That might explain the episodic visits that we're seeing at these caves from the radiocarbon dates. How am I doing on time?
Got 1 minute.
Oh. Okay, well, the last thing I want to come back to is difficulty of access. And here's a cave that's very unique in Grand Canyon. This one is very difficult to access, and you have to traverse around a very narrow ledge of crumbly limestone to get into this alcove, again with a cave behind it. And it had, more than any other cave in Grand Canyon, it had more cairns, and about 33 of them total, but it had a large cairn here, like a shrine. We called it Shrine Cave. Cairn on top of that, large rocks behind it, and then evenly spaced small cairns on the ledge behind that. We'd never seen a pattern like this in any cave before. When we entered this cave, we were certain we were the first people in there in 4,000 years. We carefully stepped on the large boulders to photograph and map the site and leave it as undisturbed as possible. We Here's a picture of that shrine with a small cairn on top. And here's one of the small cairns on the ledge. And you see an unmodified stick there, clearly placed under that rock. And it's about the size of those sticks that were used as spears in the sides of figurines. We did remove part of one of those for radiocarbon date on this site. And then here's a plan view that shows the shrine, these cairns on the ledge, a series of other cairns placed around, and then an entrance to that room and eventually the dark zone back here. There were some more figurine artifacts in here and some cairns. We think now that these difficult access sites were visited because and have more cairns in them. Because if you can make it alive into one of those sites, you want to leave a signature. So you build a little cairn, you do your ritual, you place the figurine, and then you hopefully get out of there. But to make it into a site like that that was so special to them, they would probably want to leave their own individual signature. And there's a randomness to a lot of these cairns throughout the cave, as if they were visited episodically and they built these cairns as part of that ritual. In addition, there's pack rat midden in the front of this cave that extends over to right where that shrine is, and it is full of mountain goat, extinct mountain goat dung. So then, I'll just run through these real quickly, so I'll run out of time here, but mainly we're thinking that, you know, these periodic droughts throughout the period from 4,000 to 3,000 years ago stimulated this ritual. But by then, by the end of that period, corn was being introduced in the Southwest and strategies were changing for economies. But we do think that additional radiocarbon dates are needed on figurines to really test this hypothesis in more detail. And I'll just end there with my acknowledgments to the people that helped with this. And I did want to mention that I've got some reprints still that I don't want to take back home with me. that these are papers from the 80s and 90s that are not on electronic format yet. So you can't get PDFs online. So please take a copy of those if you want to see more details on these sites from Grand Canyon. Thank you.